Hi, Dom. Thanks very much for joining us on this very nice Friday afternoon. Hope you're well.
Oh, very well, thank you. What about you, Henry? I
Yeah, pretty
mean,
good, thanks.
it
Got
looks
a
like our regions are getting deeper and deeper in a political morass.
No, absolutely. I think yeah, politics is definitely going to be the theme of the week in Europe, at least. But it's also obviously, I mean, for context, we're recording on Friday, on the 28th, and we've obviously just seen the Trump-Biden debate. It would be interesting to get your, because I know you've been covering the election in terms of giving your sort of overviews and your updates on things like funding and polling, etc. What is your take from the debate? Is it really, does it change a lot?
Quite a bit, actually. You saw the odds in favor of Trump shoot up after the debate, and I agree with this assessment. So in terms of immediate impact on markets, I think this further reduces the risk of a cut this year, or it adds to my conviction. The Fed won't cut. The Fed is worried that a Trump victory would see an increase in inflation risk through a higher deficit and tariffs. And in fact, in one of her latest speeches, Governor Bowman mentioned the risk of more expansionary fiscal policy, and I suspect she was referring to a Trump victory. So the last thing the Fed wants is to be caught with an easing bias after a jump in inflation risk, so after a Trump victory. And that's why, given that the Fed can move policy only slowly, I've been saying that more likely than not, at the September dot plot, we will see no more 2024 cuts. And so after the debate that raised the chances of Trump winning, I have more conviction on that call. Yeah.
No,
And of
absolutely.
course, I stick to my view of no actual cuts in 2024.
Yeah, no, I mean it's an interesting one because Trump has been he'd been polling ahead for a while, and I guess the market had been taking that a little bit, as with most people, with a little sort of a very wide bracket of kind of uncertainty around it. I suppose in terms of things that could happen ahead, I know there's been a lot of talk around someone else replacing Biden or Biden stepping down, some talk of like Newsom. Or potentially current VP Harris. Do you think there's one that much sort of possibility of doing that? And two, would it really change anything? I mean, I know Newsom obviously is much younger, but his polling against Trump, at least historically, has been a bit poor. I don't know how sort of timely those sort of polls have been, but
So a couple of things on that. In terms of, is there a chance? The chance is definitely higher than before the debate. It would have to come from Biden himself. We will find out over the next couple of weeks, I guess. His reaction to the debate has been very positive. He thinks his performance has been good. So we'll see. And in terms of whether the contender has a chance against Trump, of very much so. I mean, I think this is an election where overwhelmingly voters are not enthusiastic about the choice on offer. So a candidate more centrist than Gavin Newsom, who is very Californian, shall we say. Probably, would stand a good chance, maybe Gretchen Whitmer or the Illinois governor, Pritzker. It's a bit late in the game, and there will be all kinds of embarrassment and complications because there is no formal mechanism to change candidate at this stage. The change would most likely have to take place during the Democratic convention in August. But a good candidate, in my view, could have fair odds of beating Trump if the Democratic Party can unify behind such a candidate. So I think the next couple of weeks will be key.
Absolutely. And then just for my understanding, if you were to change out the presidential candidate, does that have a huge impact? Would the sort of policies for the next sort of term generally be tagged more to the president, or is there sort of are they quite set in stone? Like, say, if they were to replace Biden with someone who was a sort of more left or more center, either way, would that sort of have a very strong impact on the policies you'd expect for the sort of next term?
So it's not so much Biden versus, say, Gretchen Whitmer. It's more Biden versus Trump. So if the replacement has a better chance of winning against Trump, yeah, it makes a huge difference. Mirza Virash and I put together this note on markets and macro consequences of Trump. I mean, we're faced with a very dramatic policy change if Trump wins. I mean, one of the questions in the debate, which was unanswered, and unfortunately the moderators didn't pursue it, but it was a question to Trump about his 10% increase in tariff. Would that not increase inflation? And of course, he didn't reply, and sadly, they didn't follow up. But yeah, I think this time around, who wins is going to make a big difference in terms of policies.
No, sure thing. And yeah, it's a good point in terms of the, especially on the things like tariffs, etc., because obviously it's not just going to affect America. It's going to have a huge impact on foreign policy, especially for Europe. I think Europe is slowly coming to the terms with having to deal with a future potential Trump, which has all sorts of implications for energy policy and also defense, I think, is a big one. But potentially that may be becoming a little bit more sort of clearer. The risk of that now that we've had, as you say, this poll shift and this quite sort of a stark performance change, or sort of performance at the debates, I guess, in terms of by Biden.
Yeah, I hear that there is one company in the world whose market cap has increased at the same pace as Nvidia, and that's Rheinmetall, which is a German weapon manufacturer. So for sure, big changes ahead.
Oh, absolutely. And I suppose so.
What
Is it,
about your
was it...
Europe? What's your take? Managed to vote by internet. I was really impressed with the French Ministry of Foreign Affairs that they managed to get this set up and working relatively well. So what's your view?
No, sure thing. I mean, so from my perspective, I mean, for background, we have two pretty important elections this week. Depending how you define the week, I guess. We have the French legislative election in the first round on the 30th, so that's this Sunday. And you probably will probably expect to get sort of the results Sunday evening. And then we've got the UK election next Thursday. I think of the two, I think the French election is more interesting. And one of the
Oh,
reasons.
come. You're prejudiced. You are a Francophile. Don't do that.
Or maybe I'm just an Anglophobe. No, I mean, I think it genuinely is. I think I would say that the UK election's much more been defined by the same kind of theme that you've sort of less set out for Trump Biden. Is that is a lot of, I mean, people are not particularly passionate about any party, I think, is the main take. Labour's polling not actually that great, considering how much things like the SNP and the Tories are hated right now. But they're set to gain a massive majority, just on the basis that they're better than the alternative, really. But it's, as I say, it's nothing. I mean, I think they've tied themselves in a lot of knots in terms of what they're able to do because they've, for all intents and purposes, the Tories have written their Labour manifesto by challenging them on so many things about immigration or tax rises, and then Labour have had to sort of say, no, we won't do that. So it's basically a. I guess it's going to be very a lot of continuity in terms of policy from a lot of respects for Labour.
And what about Nigel Farage? Isn't he making a big comeback?
Yeah, I mean it's that's one of the very big unknowns, because right now what you have is Labour's set to do very well because the right wing is kind of split on votes. So between the Tories and Reform, which is sort of Farage's party, the big risks to Labour are one, complacency, because they're so far ahead on projections like record landslides and things. People might just, especially if you're on the sort of more left wing or you have sort of special interests kind of thing, maybe more likely to vote Green or Lib Dem just because Labour's going to win, if you know what I mean, or else just not turn up because Labour's going to win. And that's obviously a big risk. If that happens on to a large degree, they could see their side, or the sort of portion of the vote, really get crushed, or at least squeezed. And the other risk is obviously right now a lot of the models are based on polling, where people have sort of said, "Oh, I'm a lot of sort of 15 to 20% have said well, they're going to be voting Reform, and probably about 20 to 25% voting Tories." Obviously, when people get into the actual booth, if they suddenly have a sort of change of heart and think, "I'm voting for a right-wing party," really all I'm doing is voting for a left-wing, basically allowing Labour in, they may choose to sort of vote tactically. And if that happens to a large degree, it could again mean that the Tories do much better than current polls suggest, if the shift was towards the Tories. Or equally, it could mean that Farage's reform do much better than currently polled, if there's a shift from Tories, if they seem like the more credible threat to Labour in that seat, if that makes sense.
Isn't Farage drawing a pension from the European Parliament? I always
Oh.
thought it was an interesting little wrinkle, but I guess it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things.
I have no idea, but I would imagine I wouldn't put it past it. If I was to sort of have to dig into the hypocrisies of all the politicians, it would I'd have little else to do. But yeah, probably. But no, yeah, I mean, I suppose, I mean, we have sort of flagged that the opposition is important in the UK. They set the agenda sometimes. They obviously set the tone for debate and stuff, and having a reform agenda, a reform opposition, would I think be quite a big, that would be quite market unfriendly for the UK assets, in all honesty. One, because if you don't have a credible opposition, it allows the incumbents to really basically ignore them. So, for example, if say Labour decided to be a bit more fiscally easy, and the only criticism they're getting is from a party they don't really respect, it's less of a sort of cap on that. And two, I mean, obviously, if there's a slightly a more kind of firebrand out there party setting agendas, it really can drive the tone of debate and the tone of the nation. So into obviously very far away from 2029 right now, but that is what people are kind of now starting to look at. I think partly because this election is going to be so uninteresting to a lot of degree.
Wow. So what about the French election? It looks like there is more at stake.
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I think the French election, I mean, we've been sort of quite bearish on French assets, just on the basis that the market doesn't price political risk very well. So it didn't do very well 2018 with the Italian elections, and now we do have a situation where the highest polling party is this sort of far right, Rassemblement National, and they're also being supported by a smallish portion of the Republicans under Ciotti. So there is kind of they're sort of looking at the polls and the expectations around what seat share they would get. It's somewhere around kind of 50%, so somewhere below 50% or just above 50%. So there is a chance still, probably a fat tail risk, that they do end up with a majority. And if they were to in a sort of manage that, that would be quite, I think you'd get quite a strong market reaction, negative market reaction on that front. And as I
And
say, sorry.
what about French spread? I've always been
Yeah.
confused that they were so tied to German spread when you looked at the fundamental of the French economy, it seemed closer to Italy's and to Germany. So is there any, I mean, can this become a crisis?
Yeah, I mean, there's always that you can. It's never crises are never too far away in Europe, but I mean, I would agree. I think the fundamentals do suggest, just given where deficit's going, direction of sort of travel, even without changing government, there's a sort of 5-point-something% deficit, and a lot of the promises by Macron's finance minister For cutting sort of 10 billion here, 10 billion there in spending, it's hard to sort of really see that they're going to be able to austerity their way out of this. So there are difficulties and troubles in terms of the sort of fiscal side, even notwithstanding this kind of election. And then we do obviously have this far right party, which has a much more expansive fiscal policy, and also the left wing have a much more expansive fiscal policy, even more so in fairness, just a lower chance of actually gaining a majority. So there is a, I think certainly the sort of skew dynamic is worth reassessing, and that's why we've been kind of looking for widening overall. I think one of the interesting things, and I suppose I'm kind of splitting my mind because we've also been quite bearish Italy, just given the sort of dynamic of their deficit. But it's interesting to see that despite the fact that this is a very French specific political crisis, or I guess political situation, the BTP, so the Italian bond spread to Germany, has still acted very much just like a high beta France. So when the oat bond spread widens, BTP spread widens more, or at least to the same extent. Whether that continues to be the case once we have clarity is difficult to see. So we'd like to be short oats versus both the bund, so the core EGB, and also versus the periphery, so Spain and France and Italy, on that basis. And I think there is a tactical opportunity potentially for looking at Italy, Germany tightening on the back of once we've got some clarity, if it has been kind of pushed out for sort of unjustifiable reasons. That said, though, I think it's not just about purely the fiscal side for France. I think there is a fundamental risk to the European, I guess, experiment from having a far right France. Obviously, France is very important to Europe. Very important economy. And with already having a sort of what would typically be a far right Italian government who has really sort of played quite centrist and really been courting the centrists in Europe for a large degree, whether that adds to Meloni and the sort of Brothers of Italy's kind of room to move more towards their sort of more traditionalist sort of right wing. Remains to be seen. So there is, I think, it's more than just the single French kind of outlook that is kind of a risk for Europe right now. But I
Yeah,
mean,
for me,
sorry, sorry.
Meloni seems quite miffed that she wasn't included in the decision over the top EU spots. This makes me wonder if there is a scope for an alliance between the French and Italian extreme rights, an alliance against the diktats of Brussels.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very true, and they can make life difficult. I think the one sort of limiting factor is that Italy is still very reliant on EU money, so they do need to keep kind of playing ball with kind of Brussels, so to speak. But I think, I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, the reason why I think it's an interesting election, and we'll be sort of providing more. We've written quite a lot of it for our sort of clients, and we'll be providing more sort of updates on it as we go, especially in the week between, is because there's so much uncertainty because of this kind of two-round system. You, by the end of Sunday, we will know what the sort of first round vote pattern looked like. But that's not always that indicative of how well the second round will go. But also, we'll know what a lot of the run well what the runoffs will look like. So my expectation is that Macron's, and I think it's quite broad expectations, Macron's party will be basically run out of a lot of the runoffs, so they won't be represented in the second round. And there'll be a lot of runoffs between the far right and the left wing parties. And then that clearly a big effect that's going to have on how that kind of turns out is, for example, is there a little bit more cooperation between the Macron's party and the left wing when they realize that they're potentially not going to be running off in a lot of these seats? Is he going to sort of rally behind the sort of left wing to try and kind of get some and potentially do that with their cooperation and try and get some seats in the sort of in other sort of runoffs? So that will have a big effect, because if they do successfully sort of cooperate, there is a good chance that they'll be able to really limit and restrict how many seats the actual far right do end up with after the second round. So that's what I'll be listening out for post-election. I think it's also important what the composition of the left wing, so not only how they perform, but within that sort of coalition or alliance, whether the far left does very well, they're the really sort of firebrand ones, or whether the sort of more socialist sort of centre left do better. Because ultimately, if the far right don't get a majority, how they cobble together that coalition, basically of some sort, be it a sort of technocratic one or just a sort of really broad church, something basically to keep out the far right and form a government that way, is going to be really, it's going to be a lot more difficult if you have more of the extreme faction involved in that, so more of the LFI.
100%. I mean, you have to give it to the French that they have a, an extreme left politician like Mélenchon, who for entertainment value is unbeatable, but you know exactly what he's adding to the political process is it's a
Yes.
bit yeah. Shall we switch to the data?
No, absolutely. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, I'm happy to sort of for you to kind of lead on that front in terms of the really interesting things coming out in the US this week.
Sure. So today we got end of month data on consumption and PC inflation. So one interesting riddle was a revision of May, sorry, of April PC, core PC month on month to 0.3 from previously 0.2, which I think is going to, support the Fed view that it shouldn't be too hasty in reacting to data. And actually it never reacts to single data points. There was a very interesting research note from the St. Louis Fed. On how many months of inflation do you need to get a good forecast of the inflation for the whole year? And one of the results, very interesting paper, strongly recommend to readers, to listeners. One of the interesting results is that in order for if inflation, if core PCE was falling to 2%, in order for the 95% confidence interval to fall below 3%, you would need 9 months of data. Now, the Fed is not going to wait 9 months if suddenly we see inflation trending down, but it gives you a sense that, the sort of a few more months of good data, as Waller has been saying, and we can cut. That's probably not in the cards. So that's for the past week. But looking ahead, we have this week we have the NFP, and the this time around, wage growth is going to be, I think, more important because we had a jump in wage growth last month from 0.3 to 0.4. And there is a view out there that this is not a one-off, but a trend. And the view is from a bunch of academics who have done some work on the impact of working from home on wage growth. They argue that working from home was responsible for the very weak real wage growth we had during the recovery. And they think that working from home, the proportion of workers who are able to do that is now set, it's fully played out. And so we are seeing the wage growth that goes with a normal labor market where you don't have that shift in preference. So that will be really interesting to see where wage growth ends up. Otherwise, yeah, we're probably going to get about 200K NFP. So that's a more interesting data. Then we have Chair Powell speaking at the ECB forum on central banking. So he will be on a panel with Christine Lagarde and the governor of the Central Bank of Brazil. And I suspect there we are going to get the same message, you know, not enough confidence, need more good data, and so on and so forth. So for my neck of the woods, that's the two more important things coming up.
No, that's really, really useful. I think you make a fair point in terms of sometimes just how long a data stretch that sort of central banks particularly really need to see, and why. I mean, obviously, chatting every day and seeing the markets, it's the traders reacting to sort of single prints and stuff can be quite sort of strong. But when it's the trend, and as you say, 9 months, obviously a very long time, perhaps longer than they'll do this time, but like that's the kind of sort of region they're talking about. It's very useful. So is there anything else that's sort of coming out this week that you're sort of expecting in terms of obviously we've got Fed minutes? Is there sort of a tonal change or anything like that you'd expect from that?
So the Fed minutes, I think, are going to be fairly hawkish in line with the last presser. I mean, what's been really striking about this last Fed meeting is how much of a convergence in views we've had. I mean, the distribution of the dot was much narrower, even for a June meeting, because of course, as you move in the year, the uncertainty on the end year interest rate falls. But even if you take into account the fact that this was already the second SEP of the year, it was really unusual to have the FOMC members agree so strongly. So I think the minutes are going to be, you know, fairly hawkish, explain all the upside risks to inflation, the concerns of the FOMC, and also make the point, perhaps fairly explicitly, that a few more months of good data may not be enough. And of course, as always, this is dependent on the broad macro context. If we had suddenly signs that the US economy is tanking, of course, the Fed would be faster to react. But if we continue to have this backdrop of, you know, NFPs running around 200K or higher clip, you know, the Atlanta Fed GDP now running around 3%, I think the Fed will take its time, and this could well be one of the messages conveyed by the minutes.
Absolutely. No, that's really, really useful to hear. And I thank you so much once again for that, for all your sort of insights. And obviously, would encourage all of our clients to sort of drop you a message through the week as we get more clarity on some of this stuff. As ever, we sort of like to kind of plug some of the pieces that we've put out recently. So there's been a sort of decent number this week in terms of really sort of interesting ones. One of the things I'd sort of like to point out for our clients is we've put out a video overview of our latest sort of AI-enabled research companion, the MacroHive Copilot. So please check that out. It's sort of a video overview of everything it can do, be it sort of pulling out trades that have been recommended, very sort of intelligent use, I guess, of AI in terms of not being very sort of narrow and sort of well-informed as opposed to too broad and less so, less noise. Liang also put out a really good piece on China with a new recommended trade for going long CSI 300 via sort of a US listed tracker. Viresh has done one on the energy market and why sort of US diesel market may be turning a corner, and also has a trade recommendation on sort of long New York Harbor heating oil time spreads. We also have a piece from Bilal, which is quite interesting because one of the things that's been sort of quite surprising this year has been the dollar JPY and the deviation from rates since earlier in the year. He's written on how Norinchukin Bank's sort of situation may have kind of driven that. Then we also have a piece from Caroline on Hungary's EU presidency, which is close to anyone who's looking at the Europe's heart, I'm sure, and what that may sort of mean ahead. And then we also have just put out our first kind of global rates weekly summary, which sums up all of our sort of recent rates reports, the model outputs, and the trades that we do in a quite concise way. So I would re recommend anyone who's interested in rates, who's a sort of client, to check that out as a nice go-to place. And then, of course, anyone who wants to read about the French election, please check out all the stuff that we've written on that too. Thank you so much. Hope you have a great rest of day and weekend.
Thanks, Henry. I would like to wish to all our listeners a happy 4th of July.
Oh yes, absolutely. Happy election day for us in the UK. But yes,
So
and
much to celebrate.
very, very true. Take care, and thanks again.
Henry.